Coming up on the Empowerment Perspective podcast, I sit down with educator and coach Curtis Custis. Listen as we talk about his experience with the foster care system and how one educator changed his life. This is the Empowerment Perspective.
And I learned that it had nothing to do with the kids. The kids are going to be the kids. They're teenage boys or teenage girls. It is what it is. They're going to be kids. They're going to do teenage stuff. And I came to this new school, Winslow Township High School, and I just found a new love for teaching again. And if I had anything to say to my fellow peers, my fellow teachers, if you need to get out because you don't have a passion for it, just go. Because you are really affecting not just the teachers, but you're affecting the students because they see it and they feel it. And
all right, welcome to yet another episode of the Empowerment Perspective podcast. I go by the name of Dr. Demiso A. Josie. And as always, this is something that we bring to you guys. This is our 10th season here. So we've been doing this for actually 9 years. We doubled up one time. So this is the 10th season, starting off our 10th season strong. And as usual, we're going to bring some powerful guests on here to talk about their lives and some of the things that they're into. Today's guest we have on here, let's talk about the book. How did you end up in the book?
All right, so it was a funny story. I think right around COVID or right before COVID hit, I was just on, you know, Facebook, and there was a young lady that by the name of Anika Cohen, who was just posting stuff, you know, asking, you know, hey, if anybody's interested in writing, you know, please let me know. And I've always been interested in writing. Like, it was one of my relievers growing up. So I end up, you know, messaging her. We got to talking, and then one thing led to another. You know, she, you know, helped me with editing purposes, and one thing led to another. I end up just started writing, sent the information in, and we had a signing in December of, I believe, 2020 down in Ocean City, Maryland.
That's pretty awesome. That's interesting. So I did read the book. It's a bunch of short stories kind of like a guide also on various topics. I noticed that you're the only male that was on within this book. How did that kind of...
Well, there was another young male who was in Delaware who talked about his upbringings as well. I met him down at Ocean City, Maryland as well. But, you know, when I got down to Ocean City, Maryland, I had no idea that, you know, they had a little group chat on the side. They called me the OG of the book. Called me the OG of the book. It's an anthology. It's about five or six authors in the book that pretty much talked about their upbringing, their stories. And I guess, you know, when they read my particular story, they was like, yeah, that's the OG right there.
got you. So let's dig into your story a little bit. So you're from the South Jersey area. I'm going to let you kind of guide us on the story and what you want to share. It could be what you shared in the book. We can expand on it. But just tell your story a little bit. And, you know, that piece that was in the book, definitely touch on that. But tell your story a little bit.
Yeah, so... I'm 45 years old. 45 years old. Don't tell nobody that. But for years, and I'm talking about until my mid-30s, 33 to 35 years old, I've been dealing with a lot of major, I'm not going to say depression, because I don't never self-diagnose myself with anything. But I was definitely sad internally. And I knew one of the main reasons why I was dealing with this particular sadness was because of what was going on with my past history. And part of my past history, you know, and I'm very open with it now. I was raised in the foster care system. I don't take anything away from my mother, my father, who was not in my life as much as I anticipated. I can get into that later as well. And I don't take anything away from a lot of people, you know, because I learned a lot about the power of forgiveness. But the one thing that I did to have to, I had to do was, you know, at least speak up on what I was dealing with and the reason why I was dealing with it. So in that particular book, you know, I talk about being a 9-year-old little boy being taken away from the people who he'd known all his life. And I don't know if anybody, you know, I mean, I'm sure some people could relate in our world, in our society, but being taken away from family, I'm talking about family. I'm talking about your siblings. I'm talking about, you know, that everybody got that one auntie, those two aunts that really like take a heed to you. So being snatched away from them, being snatched away from your cousins, being snatched away from your sister, being snatched away from your mom, being snatched away from your friends, the schools that you've been into, that was a hard thing for me to deal with, you know. So they end up coming to get me, you know. Dyfus came and get me we used to call it Bedrock back in the days, the Seabrook up in Upper Deerfield. They came and get me. I remember just getting into a car, this little four-door, I don't know, Chrysler or, you know, Oldsmobile, got into that little car, and I just remember just waving my hands goodbye in the back seat to a couple of my family members. I had no idea where I was going. I had no idea what was going on. I ended up in a particular place. Till this day, if I haven't, like I have still haven't seen any paperwork on my situation. Till this day, I have no idea who that first person was that I went to. All I remember, he was a white male. He owned a pizza shop. I remember working in a pizza shop, you know, folding boxes. I remember, you know, just taking baths here and there, you know, that man just washing me up and down, and felt a little uncomfortable, but didn't do anything that I thought was a little, you know, out of ordinary. But I'm a 9-year-old boy, I know how to wash myself, like, and you know, my brother end up leaving after a couple of days. So after those couple of days, he end up coming back. I guess, you know, Dyfus found him, he ended up coming back. And 3 days after that, I'm now moving again. So I went from being in a home with family members. I'm not just saying my mom, because I wasn't always with my mom growing up at 9 years old, but I've been with family members for 9 years to this one white man's house for almost a week. And then now I'm shifted to Salem, New Jersey. Grew up with the family out there. Very, very nice family. Wouldn't take anything away from the majority of them, quote unquote. Just raised me from 9 to, you know, up to about 14 years old. I had a really good time, you know. During that time, I ended up getting bullied. That's when I first realized what bullying really was. Ended up having to protect myself. You know, got into a couple of fist fights with that one particular bully, and after the second fight, he ended up just leaving me alone. You know, became real close friends, and you know, I made some friends out there. Played, you know, one league of Pop Warner football out there with my foster brother. It was a good experience, you know. That's when I first learned how I was just afraid of dogs. Got bit by a German Shepherd delivering newspapers at the age of 12, you know, on my leg. So it was a tough experience. The toughest was that, you know, I never really got an opportunity to see my family. You know, it's a thing that I really missed. You know, nobody, with the exceptions of one person, came to visit me within those 5 years, you know, and that was my oldest brother. You know, my mom never came down. My other brothers never came down. My aunts, uncles, nobody. So, you know, that was hard. That was a hard pill to swallow. And I guess, like, you know, right around, you know, and I'm just jumping right into the conclusion of that part of my life, 14 years old, You know, I was blamed for stealing jewelry. You know what I mean? So, you know, I talked to my foster mother. She said that she believes me, but I am the new person in town. None of this really ever happened until I got here. And I'm like, well, I don't know what I would do with jewelry.
Right.
And behold, me and, you know, the sister, the foster sister, got into a little argument. The mother, the foster mother, was trying to get us to calm down. And lo and behold, her older brother, who was probably 35, 40 years old, just slapped me right across my face. I was 14 years old. I mean, this dude wasn't a tall guy, but, you know, definitely muscles everywhere. And I'm looking at this, I'm like, this is the second time a grown man them put their hands on me while I was in Salem, New Jersey. You know, first time there's a guy who, you know, just, I bumped into him by mistake. I said, excuse me. Lo and behold, I'm knocked out in the alley with beer poured down my face. I'm waking up the next morning, not knowing what's going on, why my jaw is swollen. And they told me, like, yeah, some guy punched you in your face and he knocked you out in the alley in Salem. And I remember the group. It was a group of men just walking down the alley, just enjoying themselves. And me being who I am, I just accidentally bumped into him, me and my buddy. My buddy came back over that day and said, yeah, you told the police you was knocked out in front of, you was hit in front of Pat's Pizzeria. Well, the alley was 2 miles away from there. So he hit me into oblivious.
Wow, that's crazy. Let's talk about, during this time, obviously you're in school, middle school probably, I'm assuming. How did that experience with you growing up in that system, how did it impact you in the classroom and the things that you had to deal with in school, or did it not impact you?
So the only impact that I really had, it was two impacts. One, I talked about the bullying situation. You know, it wasn't that I was afraid to go to school. I was just afraid to go see this guy. You know, I remember, you know, him and his friends surrounding me, telling me bark like a dog in the middle of a playground. You know what I mean? I remember, you know, falling down one day, and, you know, he didn't hit me when I fell, but just trying to get away from me, I ended up falling. And I stood up and hit my head on the end of a air conditioner in Salem at the school. And, you know, I looked at my hand was full of blood. I ran down the middle of the hallway. And I think, like, after that particular time, I got tired of it, because, you know, the next couple of days, you know, he was bothering me, and I remember him chasing me, and I ended up turning around. I kind of slammed him, quote unquote, but not slamming. I just turned around. I fell down. He fell on top of me, but my momentum carried me over him. So I was on top of him. Mm-hmm. So that's when I had to learn to fight back. Mm-hmm. So that was the first incident where it really affected me, just being bullied and picked on and teased, you know, during that time. The second one was, I wasn't the best reader. You know, growing up, prior to being 9 years old, you know, I used to get beatings because I didn't want to read. So a person who was being forced to read certain things, you know, growing up, school or in the house, I just didn't like doing it. And because I didn't want to do it, my aunt, my uncle, they beat me. All right. And I just let it be. So going to, I believe it was like third or fourth grade at that particular time, nobody knew. You know, I'm a teacher now, and, you know, we have a hard time even knowing if a student could read or can read, because we don't ask those questions. You know, so it's embarrassing. You know what I mean? And being a 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 year old little kid, you don't know how to read. So it becomes a major problem. So those are my two big issues that I had, two of the big issues I had in school during that time.
So how do we get from not liking to read to now writing that you're writing and putting your life out into the book? Try to bridge that gap for me a little bit.
So I end up, you know, I was telling you how the guy, you know, slapped me across my face, and And I, prior to him doing that, I want to say about 2-3 months prior to that, you know, Miss Nichols, who's my foster mother, you know, God rest her soul, just passed away 2 years ago, asked me if I wanted to be adopted. And I shook my head no. I was like, because I felt in my heart my mom was coming to get me. And although she never came, that slap gave me the power to say, you know what, I'm done. So I walked from Salem to Bridgeton. It's a good 20, 25 minute ride. So it took me about 8-9 hours.
Wow.
You know, I rekindled with my family. I'm not going to go all into how, where, and all that. Rekindled. Ended up getting into school. It was in, went to, you know, my seventh, the end of sixth grade, going into my seventh grade year. I'm still having problems. I'm still, now I'm a knucklehead. You know, now I'm doing devious things. I'm, you know, not listening to the teachers. You know, I'm about to swing on a teacher for him taking my hat off of my head. You know, fast forward, now I'm in the high school. Excuse me, I'm in eighth grade. Eighth grade, I found my passion. I found track and field. Track and field literally saved every part of my body. I was good at it. It was rare that I lost in eighth grade. Move on to ninth grade. I was decent. I was good. But we had a powerhouse. It was up until my 10th grade year, and I still had problems with reading and writing. Back then, they called it the HESPA, HSPT, where it was mandated that you had to pass that course. My sophomore year, I failed English for a marking period. The teacher told me, your handwriting is extremely terrible and you never understand what is going on in this class, so I'm not passing you. And because she didn't pass me, now I'm technically ineligible to play football. Again, I played football one year in Pop Warner, and then freshman and sophomore year, I started playing, and I enjoyed it. That teacher, I had to take her to the Board of Education, and I told them that it's not my fault. This is my exact words. Well, it's not my fault that she can't read my handwriting. It's not my fault. She need to be able to read everybody's handwriting. That's just it. And lo and behold, the Board of Education agreed with me. They end up telling her, like, you pretty much got to change his grade. He's going to be allowed to play football. And at that moment, I knew she would have been my favorite teacher because she told them he could play as much as he want, but I refuse to change this grade. There's nothing that I'm going to do to change this grade. I work with him to get better with his writing, but I'm not changing his grade. Fast forward to my college year, and now I'm still in this HSPT class up until my senior year. The subject that I was failing was reading. My senior year, I end up just passing by the skin of my teeth. If I don't pass this, I don't graduate high school. Sophomore year in college, or at, when I was at Rowan University, professor, this handwriting is terrible. You, like, even when you are typing, you're terrible, directly to my face. So I called this teacher back in Bridgeton and asked her, like, what was the problem? She was like, well, to be honest, like, you never had an argument. Like me, like, I was a person growing up that when I get upset with somebody, I get mute. I don't talk to anybody. I stay to myself. I don't argue about anything. Now, when I do go off, it's just on 1,000. I'm talking about me breaking stuff, me throwing stuff, me hitting people, me swinging at people. It was bad. So she was like, you never knew how to had an argument to persuade somebody to do something. So since she told me that, I've been a lot better at comprehending what I'm saying and comprehending what I'm reading. And lo and behold, I always enjoy writing like little poems here and there. I can never remember off the top of my head, but I love writing them down.
Yeah.
When you know professors say, "Hey, do a draft and then do your final page," I was never a person who could do a draft. But you give me a question, I could sit here and just type, and I go back and just refix whatever I need to refix. But I've never been a person who could draft something and then rewrite it. I just have to write stuff.
Gotcha. Let's go back to track for a second during that time, because those of you that follow me, you know my story about basketball, and I say basketball saved my life. Similar situation as yours. But how did describe how track saved your life? Like, what does that mean? What did it do for you?
So when I came back to Bridgeton, like I said, 9 to 14 years old, I did 1 year of Pop Warner football in Salem. When I came back to Bridgeton, I didn't do anything until my eighth grade year. So sixth grade, I didn't do anything. Got caught, you know, got in trouble a little bit, you know, smoking black and milds. You know, I had a drink here and there in sixth grade. Seventh grade, I'm, striking people in the face. Cab drivers, trying to run away from cab drivers. Stealing like packs of gum in the stores. Like, I was doing idiotic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I got caught one day and went to the juvenile detention center. I was there for about two or three days. And I learned how to play softball there. You know, softball came. I tried to catch it. I didn't know how to catch back then.
Mm-hmm.
Bust me in my eye. I learned how to play. You know what I mean? So I get out. You know, my mom is, you know, trying to make sure that I'm trying to stay on the right path. And it was difficult. You know, I'm trying to listen to a woman who gave me up.
Hmm.
So I got involved with track and field in eighth grade. We had this field day in the middle school. And, you know, one of the former PE teachers, coaches was like, "I think you need to go out for track." And when I went out for it, you know, I never forget my first practice. I'm with everybody. I'm like, oh, this is cool. Like, I'm finally on top of something. Have my first meet, you know, and then you could run anything. You could do anything. I was running 100. I was running a 200. Running a 400. I was long jumping. I was just doing everything. So I win all four or five of those events. The 55 dash. I was winning everything. The next meet come, the same thing. You know, so my entire eighth grade year, I never lost anything. I was a 19-foot, 11-foot long jumper in eighth grade. And I felt like I belonged. I never wanted to allow anything to get in the way of that success that I had just during the eighth grade year. I come across this one track meet. If you notice behind me is Omega Psi Phi Fraternity Incorporated.
I was going to ask you about that, but go ahead.
it's called the Omega Relays.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking. The Omega Relays is a track and field event that allows all middle school kids to come in and compete for a championship. We give out medals. Well, they gave out medals. They gave out trophies, and they gave out T-shirts. And I'm looking at this sea of purple and gold of just men just all over the place, just letting this track meet just go on and on. And I'm in five events. I'm in the long jump. I'm in the 4x1. I'm in the 4x2. I'm in the 4x4. I even ran, they had individual races where they did the 100, and I ran the 100. And I won all five of those. You know what I mean? So I got five T-shirts, five gold medals, had the MVP of the track meet, and that's when I knew I needed to make sure that I continue on with this. Continued on throughout high school, I don't like saying it, but I mean, I was successful. Now I won some state championships, I won some team titles, I won some individual titles, and it just became a passion of mine.
Mm-hmm. So we're about the same age. We probably ran against each other. I went to Delsey, so we probably definitely ran against
each other. Oh, okay. Sutton Tucker?
Yes, I was on the hurdle relay team, actually.
Yeah. We definitely probably ran against each other.
Sutton's my man. Shout out to Sutton. You can check it out sometimes. Let's talk about fraternity life before we get to close out this thing. I kind of get a sense of why you decided to pledge that particular fraternity from your growing up, but what has the fraternity done for you personally as a man?
So that crew that I seen in eighth grade, I knew some of them. Well, I knew one of them who was a mentor to my mentor. Brother D. Edward Hursery, God bless the dead. I ended up going to the high school in ninth grade. And lo and behold, who was my PE teacher? Coach Felton Lango, Mr. Felton Lango. Purple and gold, you know, first day. I mean, this was probably one of the most strict men I've ever seen. He seen me in PE, you know, you don't have your socks up the right height. If your socks is different color, your shirt ain't tucked in. He had a blue pin and a red pin. That red pin is out. It's a problem. Then I seen him in ISS one day. I got in trouble, and he ripped me a new one. And I said, "This is what I need." What the fraternity has done for me? It taught me to be disciplined. I go through a lot of situations, you know, as a teacher, as a person, as a father, as a husband, but it taught me to be disciplined. And going through the organization, the way I've been going through it, it's like life. If you're not disciplined, you're going to fall. So this is the one thing that this particular organization has taught me, to be disciplined.
Got you. One last serious question here. By the time this podcast comes out, we'll be starting a new school year. So any words of encouragement for this upcoming school year for teachers, all educators across the country that check us out?
Yeah, definitely for the teachers. You know, I've been teaching for about 18 years, going on my 19th year. And in 2017, 2016, 2017, I had a little downfall to where, you know, I just was not a big fan of what was going on administratively. That was, you know, my old school. And I learned that it had nothing to do with the kids. The kids are going to be the kids. They're teenage boys or teenage girls. It is what it is. They're going to be kids. They're going to do teenage stuff. And I came to this new school, Winslow Township High School, and I just found a new love for teaching again. And if I had anything to say to my fellow peers, my fellow teachers, if you need to get out because you don't have a passion for it, just go. Because you are really affecting not just the teachers, but you're affecting the students because they see it and they feel it. And I wouldn't want students to feel like I don't care about them. I don't want students to feel like they're all foster kids to me. I want them to feel like I'm a teacher, I'm here, I care about you, I care about your success, I care about your future, I care about what you want to do in your life, no matter what it is. Like if you want to, you know, be a rapper, cool. Go be a rapper. Be the best rapper you can be. But you better go learn some words. You know what I mean? So just for my fellow teachers, just if you don't like it, just move aside. Let some new blood come in. Let some new teachers come in and try to enjoy the moment.
Got you. Thank you for those words. It's time for us to move to the Teacher's Lounge. This is a segment where we, you know, you go to the Teacher's Lounge, you talk stuff, you steal somebody's food out the refrigerator for their lunch and stuff like that. So we're going to kind of lighten the mode up a little bit here and do a little game called This or That. So I'm going to give you a choice between one or two things. You have to pick one and kind of explain why you picked the one. So based upon our conversation, writing a narrative or writing poetry.
Writing poetry.
Why?
Poetry. You write poetry just about for anything, whether it's love, whether it's hate, whether it's judgmental, whether it's opinionated, rather it. Poetry is about you. It's what you want to do. It's who you are. So I'd rather write poetry than just writing a narrative about anything.
Gotcha. I'm stealing this question. If you watch Drink Champs, I'm stealing this question. Loyalty or respect?
Ah, that's a tough one.
Tough one.
Yeah. I'd rather have loyalty. You know what I mean? In high school, you go through high school, you have 200-300 kids that you graduate with. In college, you got 5,000, 6,000. But you go through college with, 10,000 people, but you got 5,000 or, 2,000 people you graduate with. But you can pick on one hand how many friends you have that are really loyal. Maybe two. If you get past two, you good. But I could probably on one, maybe two hands that I'd rather have my loyalty with my friends than the respect.
Gotcha, gotcha. Tough one. Teaching or coaching track?
Whoa, now. Hey, now. that for me, that's, so I teach health and physical education, recreation, and dance. It's a passion. I really love it. I get to play games with kids, teach them how to play certain games. I do a lot of dance lessons with them. Going up into my old high school, Kingsville Regional High School, and I taught a lot of ballroom dancing. Also, moved on to some little reggae dancing. Now, just moving on. I even taught some country line dancing. Now I'm in the soul line dancing a lot, so I teach a lot of soul line dancing here and there, and it's so much fun. But it's something about track and field that it is just a part of me. It's a part of my world. It's a part of my blood. I'm able to get more kids into secondary school than track and field than I am teaching PE.
Gotcha.
My buddy Leslie Miles, she went to school for track and field. Got a degree because of track and field. You know what I mean? So it's fun. So it's definitely gonna be track and field.
So awesome, awesome. Well, Curtis, I thank you for your time today and taking the time out and on your relaxing summer day. Definitely need that mental time, that down break before you go back to school. Definitely appreciate the fact that you are educating our children out here, especially in the South Jersey area. I actually used to live in Sicklerville for a little bit, so shout out to them out there. And also, the coaching and being willing to tell your story. Not everyone is, at a space to be able to do that. For me, when I wrote my book about my life, it kind of was like a release for me. Do hope at some point that you do continue the story and share as much as you can about the way you grew up and the way you see things and the discipline that you learn, because it's definitely needed out here, especially for our young people, for sure. So thank you again for being on. I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me. Much appreciated. I'm definitely going to continue on with my story. And we're not athletes anymore. Like, we're not professional athletes. You hear a lot of professional athletes going through the same exact situation, but we're not seen. So this podcast is helping, other men and women who've been going through the same situation as our professional athletes be able to be heard and be seen. So I definitely appreciate it. I wish you nothing but the best of luck. And if you ever need me for anything else, then you got my email.
Gotcha. Appreciate you, sir. Thank you.
All right. Enjoy.
Yeah.